You are now listening to the Photography Enthusiast Podcast. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Photography Enthusiast Podcast. Finally, Photos by D. Lee has come back to the Photography Enthusiast Podcast. And for you that don't know what I'm referencing, that's The Rock. Every time Rock would come back somewhere in wrestling, that's what he would say. But yeah, finally I'm back. My voice is returned, not sick, not overseas. Finally have the time to record. Apologies for anyone that was actually looking for the episodes. I did post on Twitter a few times saying, you know, episode will be delayed, no episode, that kind of stuff. But finally, sorry, I'm back. So, you know, as usual, personal updates, news, main topic. For what I just, you know, straight away in personal updates, not much because I'm keeping it casual this time again. I think for the whole keeping it casual, I might do one every 5-6 episodes, just keeping it casual, just talk about whatever. You know, long time since I last did a podcast. I think it's been a few months. So the longest break I've had in that two and a half years. So hopefully, you know, be another 2.5 years till I take a break that long, but we'll see how we go. Originally, I was meant to record an episode before I went on my vacation to Bali for my wedding, but I had got sick and pretty much had lost my voice before the trip, and I just needed a rest and, you know, get better for, so I'm healthy for my wedding. So I did that recording. Then I was fine in Bali pretty much the whole time, but just as we came back, I started to get sick. I think because I was going from, you know, for me personally, it was really hot in Bali. So I was going through the super hot weather outdoors, hopping in the air conditioned car or air conditioned building, like freezing cold air conditioning, and then back out. So, you know, it's pretty easy to get sick that way. So I ended up losing my voice a bit, having a cough, that kind of stuff. Took tests, wasn't COVID, but, you know, I did get quite sick. So once I got back, my original plan was the day after or the day I got back, I was going to be recording a podcast episode. But because I was sick, I couldn't talk, you know, that sort of took me over a week to recover. And then, yeah, pretty much now we're at where we are. Since we're keeping it casual, pretty much I'll be covering everything else in the main topic. So we're pretty much going to get straight into the news. Now, Canon have announced, or I believe soon to be already released, the RF 24mm f1.8 and the 15mm f4.5 to 6.3. Now, Canon have announced these two new compact lightweight and wide angle lenses for the RF mount, both full frame lenses. They're not RFS. So although you will be able to use them on your APS-C if you're getting an R10 and an R7, these are designed mainly for full frame. And if you are using them on APS-C, you just need to times it by 1.6 and you'll get what kind of focal length they are. Now with the 24mm f1.8 macro IS STM lens, that one has a built-in STM motor. So I would assume based on the price of $599, it's probably going to be like the RF 35 and 85 and all those kind of lenses. Less than ideal. Canon keeps saying, you know, it's for smooth, quiet video operation, but stills, it usually sounds horrible. I really wish they would just go with the USM lenses like what they have in the RF 100 to 400. These aren't even like full macro lenses. They're only half macro. So to me, I would rather them just not even have that ability, me personally, and then have proper AF motors in them that aren't so noisy. But I know some people do appreciate their close focus. So the glass has an ultra low dispersion element, one UD element, one aspherical element, and Canon's super spectra coating to help minimize ghosting and flare. It has minimum focusing distance of 14 centimeters with a magnification of 0.5. IS has correction up to 5.5 stops. It's 270 grams and will be available in late August. I did own a 24mm lens before the 24 1.4 GM. In terms of focal lengths, I don't know, 24 is just weird focal length for me. I own the 16mm Sigma as well, which is around 24, 25. It's too wide. I don't know, it's very weird focal length for me. I'm so used to 35. I feel like 24, it's too wide kind of for people. You can make it work for full body, that kind of stuff, for a certain look. I think a lot of fashion, like that kind of photojournalism, uses 24. But for me, as a general purpose lens, 24 was just too wide. For cityscapes, I took some really nice cityscapes with the 24GM when I was shooting Sony. I really like that lens for cityscapes, and that focal length for cityscapes works quite well too. It's not too wide, but it's wide enough to be able to crop that kind of, do panoramas if you do need it wider. I took some really nice photos of Barangaroo and of the city skyline from Luna Park with that lens. I don't know if I would consider getting this 24mm. It's nearly a grand, I think, AUD, around that area, somewhere around the 900. So for me, you know, not really worth it, but we'll see how we go. I doubt it. I'm very conflicted with my gear right now, so I'm trying not to change anything until I, number one, recover my finances, and number two, decide what I want to do. In terms of the other lens, the RF 15mm, 15 to 30mm f4.5 to f6.3 will be available for $549.99. So it has two UD glass elements, one a spherical element, and that Canon SSC element to help minimize ghosting and flare. Has 5 stops of shake correction, 7 stops when using a body with IBIS, so your R6, your R5, your R3, and your R7 all have IBIS. It has a minimum focusing distance of 28 centimeters or 13 centimeters when using manual focus at 15 millimeters, which is pretty impressive. STM AF drive, which obviously, same as before, you know how I feel about STM motors, I do not like them. It is only 392 grams, which is probably one of the most impressive parts of it, and also available in late August. Now, currently, we'll get into it in the keeping casual main topic, but this is a lens I am kind of interested in, mainly due to the weight, and you know, I feel like I need a zoom. This would replace the 16mm, but yeah, we'll see how we go. Both lenses, I'm sure, will be very popular. Canon have been really sort of filling out their more budget area of their lens lineup. I wouldn't mind seeing some mid. They've, you know, got quite a lot of really budget lenses and quite a lot of high-end lenses, like your 1.2Ls, 28-70L, that kind of stuff. I would love to see some mid-range lenses, non-L versions of like a 51-4, 35-14, and an 85-14. Just make them like, I don't know how much they would have to be, like 700-800 USD, and then, actually probably a bit too low maybe, because I don't know how conversion will work. Maybe say like 900 USD and around 1500 AUD. Make them non-L sort of thing, or maybe L if you want. Either way, make them in that price range, make them small, light, maybe more simpler designs. They don't need like 15 elements and 20 groups. Make them more simple, just keep them sharp, really nice rendering. Doesn't have to have the strongest build, not that L mount quality build. Just make something in the mid range for those of us who want something better, but then not the most high end. Like a 16 to 35 f4, that was like a great lens. But then now it's the EF mount is gone up in price quite a bit. 1700 AUD you can buy it for, compared to the 14 to 35 RF lens, which goes for around 2300 on sale. So, you know, for me, the 500, I'd rather, even though 500 is a lot of money, I would rather pay that for the RF lens and the EF lens, especially when I bought it previously for 1100. But Canon definitely has started to fill out the budget end. Now, please focus on the mid-range, hopefully anyway, but hopefully we get more announcements and more lenses released this year. And I'd love to see that entry-level RF body that they had teased before, the sub $1,000 one. Because if that's good, then maybe I'll be selling Fuji, who knows? You know, with me, you never can predict what my gear habits and my gear changing would be. So next up, we have the Tamron 50 to 400 f4.5 to 6.3 lens announced. So Tamron has announced this lens for Sony E-mount full frame mirrorless cameras, which is expected to be available from this fall in the US, so be spring for us. The 54 to 400 boasts an 8x zoom ratio and will be the same size as a conventional 100 to 400 lens, but offer a wider angle of view. It weighs 1,155 grams, or 1.15 kilos. A linear motor focus mechanism that the company says offers excellent quietness and responsiveness when autofocusing. It features vibration compensation, a minimum focusing distance of 24 centimeters at the 50mm end. The 50 to 400mm will offer an optional Arca Swiss compatible accessory tripod mount, as well as being compatible with camera specific features and functions, including fast hybrid AF and IAF. It has a 67mm filter thread, and the company has not yet announced the price of its new lens, and it has warned that the release date or product supply could be affected due to the current global health crisis. However, it is scheduled for fall 2022. Images look decent, but for me, you know, these kind of super zoom lenses, in a way, it's not really even a super zoom, because 100 to 400 is a pretty standard, you know, lens. This is just getting that extra 50 millimeters, but it does change views quite a bit, so it is kind of like a super zoom. Either way, I'm curious why Tamron keep making these kind of zooms. They used to make such, you know, like, I guess they want to do something different than the normal 70 to 200, 85 prime, 50 prime, 35 millimeter prime. those were the lenses they would always kind of do on Canon, pretty much the same competing with Canon. But with Sony, I feel like they're just doing lenses that Sony don't make. Because for you that don't know, for anyone that does know, I believe Sony own 11 or 12% stake in Tamron. So you have to wonder if they have some kind of say in what lenses make Tamron make, because you'll find the lenses that Tamron make tend to sort of complement Sony rather than compete with them. Whereas, you know, like Sigma, their lenses compete with Sony. For, you know, the 85R competes with the 85GM. Same with the 35 1.4R competes with the 35GM. They actually going head to head with them and making lenses that are pretty much the same, but, you know, the cheaper price, maybe different look to them, different rendering, that kind of stuff. Whereas Tamron, they're making completely different lenses to what Sony offers, which is the strange part. Either way, I'm assuming these kind of really huge zooms must be selling. Otherwise, why would they keep making them? But I guess we'll find out over time to see if they keep selling well, if Tamron starts making them differently. I really wish Tamron would just release their 28-75, 17-28, that kind of stuff on Canon. Because if the 17-28 was available, that would be very, very, very good. Because then you have your, if assuming it's similar pricing to what it would be on Sony, that new Canon 15-30 goes for around $999 AUD. And I believe the Tamron on Sony goes for around 1400 AUD. And then you have the 14-35, which is around 2300. Now, obviously, both the Canon lenses are significantly wider, but this one is a f2.8 constant, whereas the other two, you know, the 15-30 is a pitiful f4.5 to 6.3, and the other one's a constant f4, which isn't as bad. But either way, this one brings something more competitive out. You need that to push Canon to give offer these kind of lenses as a first party and also just adjust their pricing. Because the 14-35 price, to me, I think is still a bit ridiculous considering the price of the 16-35. They put it up by like 600 AUD recently. Either way, next story. Nikon updates free Z-mount lenses with better manual focusing. So Nikon has released firmware updates for a trio of Nikon mirrorless Z-mount lenses that add support for linear focus ring rotation when in manual focus mode, which makes it easy to accurately pull focus. The updates were in response to user complaints that the focus by wire or non-linear focusing in Z-mount lenses become laggy and prone to overshooting their focusing targets. By adding linear manual focus pulling, focus becomes more accurate and easier to implement. Now, as spotted by Nikon rumors, a firmware update is available for free lenses for the Nikkor Z50mm f1.2, the Nikkor Z24-70mm f2.8, and the Nikon ZMC-105 f2.8 VRS lens. So these features are also available in the Z9 camera running firmware version 2.0 or newer, as well as the Z6-2 and Z7-2 running firmware version 1.4 or newer. It's always good to see these kind of firmware updates. I don't know what happened with this mirrorless range. I'm guessing the way these cameras are designed, both Canon and Nikon, being mirrorless or more computers than they are cameras, allows them to add and update all the lenses and the bodies so much more by firmware. If you look back at the previous generation of DSLRs from both Nikon and from Canon, we never got these kind of firmware updates. So it is really, really nice to see how many features are getting added to each body and each brand. It's really, really great. Now, all we need is Sony to actually do that as well. Usually, you know, these kind of updates are saved as an incremental update just for their bodies. You know, a new version, the A7 IV Mark II would have that sort of feature you could just add for a firmware update. Not always like that, but it does kind of feel like that sometimes. Like with the menus, they honestly could have released those menus on all the bodies. They try to claim that it's tied to the processor, which was just a lie. Otherwise, next up, Canon pulls the R3 firmware update, then re-adds it. So as you may have known or read, Canon released a firmware update for the EOS R3, R5, and R6. When it came to the R3 version 1.2, they added a new custom high-speed continuous shooting setting that allows for capture of between 30 to 195 frames per second at full resolution in JPEG, TIFF, or RAW. Canon said that this mode allows it to shoot between 2 and 50 photos at this speed. The original firmware was then pulled, which was reported online as being due to the mode dial. If you perform a reset after installing a new firmware update, the mode dial doesn't work correctly and you can't change between settings such as TV or AV, which is obviously quite a serious issue. But now, thankfully, Canon has re-released the firmware, which is now available from their website, And I don't believe there's been any more reports of this issue happening. So everything should be all fine and well now. In terms of the updates for Canon, it's a bit different. I mean, not for Canon, for the R6 and the R5. They were more general updates, bug fixes, that kind of stuff. A few small minor changes, which I didn't really note down. But otherwise, I really still want my highlights, zebra highlight warnings on the R6 and the R5. Sadly, you know, it's been so long now. The camera's been out for a few years and I still don't have them. If I was to buy something like an A7 IV, it's funny because they have the zebra highlight warnings, but they don't have the bulb timer, which I really, really, really love. If I had to pick which one was better, it's so hard, honestly, because they both add something very great to cameras. The bulb timer is sort of, you know, it helps you. You don't need to ever carry a remote. If you're a landscape shooter, cityscape shooter, someone that does long exposures, you never need a remote trigger with you because everything is done in the camera. Whereas with the zebra highlight warnings, you're going to get much cleaner exposures because you know how much you can expose to the right without blowing your highlights. So it does save you a bit more time in editing in that regard. So both are so, so important. I don't know why they can't just add both. I can't remember. I think the Fuji technically doesn't have a bulb timer. Yeah, just you can do up to 6 hours or 9 hours of normal exposures that way, just in its sort of normal mode. So it's good in that sense. Whereas with the Canon's a bit more advanced. You can set, I believe you can in the Fuji anyway, but with the Canon, you can set like, I want 5 minutes, 4 seconds, 5 minutes, 2 seconds. It doesn't have to be a full stop or a quarter stop or anything like that. It's however long you want it to be. So that is a really great feature. Either way, Sony, I don't think, unless they've added in the firmware, which from what I could see online, they haven't, doesn't do either, which is the more disappointing part. Next and last story is Nikon increases lens prices in the United States. So this is a quick one. For those that don't know, like lens prices that were introduced in other regions are now coming to the United States in August, which is already now. We're nearly a quarter of, nearly halfway through August. It's the, at the time of recording, I'm recording this on the 7th. So yep, we're pretty much quite far in. But a list of all lenses can be found in the article that's linked in the show notes. But it's quite long, pretty much all the Z-mount lenses. And they're as high as $100 price increase. To me, $100 doesn't sound that much. I know in the US, that kind of pricing is very, people will not pay that much if it's gone up by that much. Here, I don't know, maybe it's where it used to being ripped off. You'll see lens prices fluctuate by like $500, $600. So seeing a $100 price increase, yeah, you just wait till one of the sales and it'll drop below that again. It's not like a huge deal, but I guess, you know, different markets, different people, different preferences. What they're used to is all different, but yeah. Otherwise, so if you're a Nikon user, it's probably now a bit too late to go out and buy Z-mount lenses before the price increase because it would have already happened. So sorry for reporting on it late, but I know if I had recorded weeks ago, wouldn't I be able to warn you, but can't blame me, okay? Blame Nikon, I'm joking. That's it for the news. Now we're onto the main topic. So as I said at the start of the episode this week, keeping it casual part two, I'm going to keep it going with the keep it casual. So I just didn't really want to just cover one main topic. I could easily do it, but you know, I just wanted to talk a little bit about everything. So this was the easiest way. So since getting back, I've just been trying to catch up on my editing. I did release a blog post yesterday at time recording, which would have been Saturday for me. Anyone in the Northern Hemisphere or usually America, that kind of stuff, Europe would have probably been a Friday for you. That was on the topic we're going to be covering in this episode. Otherwise, yeah, just been going through all my Bali photos. I didn't take a ton of photos. I think in total, there was about 370 images that I took. To me, that doesn't seem like a lot. I'm not the type to photograph every single little thing. Just something I see interesting, you know. I'm not editing all 370. Obviously, I probably edit maybe 20. Actually, I think I've already had 20 photos. Maybe 30, 40 max, I'd say, since I don't have that many left to go through. Otherwise, once I finish that, I'll do a big blog post on photos by DLEE for that. I decided with that blog post, I did release some photos by DLEE. I also released on TPE about my wide angle dilemma. I thought, you know, since it's purely just about photography, might as well just release it as a post. So at least I got some content out there. So when it comes to my vacation, I don't really like saying where I'm going before I go. I don't like advertising I'm traveling. Maybe the security, the paranoid, the kind of stuff in me just doesn't like putting it out there. But I did go to Bali in Indonesia. If you have never heard of Bali, which I'd be surprised if you hadn't. A lot of people in Australia tend to go there, more in Western Australia than everywhere else, mainly because Bali is very close to Australia. So if you're living in Western Australia, Perth, the small town of Perth, I'm sure if I have any Perth subscribers, they're going to be hating me, but That one is only about 3 hours, 3.5 hours to fly to Sydney. I mean, to Bali from Perth. Whereas if you fly to Sydney, it's like 4 hours. It's pretty much the same distance, if not closer, to go to Bali. So that's why a lot of people do go there. Why go overseas? I mean, go interstate when you can go overseas and everything is cheaper and it's closer. So this is my second time going there. It had definitely changed a lot. The last time I went was 2011. I didn't get to go to the same sort of area. So the last time I went, I stayed in Legian. And I also went around Kuta and that. Back then, I wasn't doing photography yet. That was at the start of the year, I believe. And I got into photography. That was in February. I got into photography in September. But when I did go, it was kind of like before I was the start of my interest in photography again. Because I had a point and shoot and I took photos everywhere I went. And then I was editing them in Photoscape. And that's how I got into photography, because I want to take more photos to edit. Was more editing I was into first than I was taking photos. But anyway, I took photos there, which I don't even know where they are now. I really need to find them because I feel like I've lost them, which, you know, would be a bad thing. But otherwise, it'd been a long time. And obviously because of COVID, a lot of stuff changed from what we were told, you know, like areas that used to be super busy, like Kuta, the people moved on. They've gone to other areas like Canggu and that kind of stuff now. So that was different. We stayed in a place called Seminyak because my wife wanted to stay there. So she had read online. She read online that it's where all the high-end shopping and all that is. So that's why she wanted to stay that. She thought it was the fanciest area. So when we got there, and then the high-end mall that she had read about was literally like 6 stores. And one of them was like H&M and Polo Ralph Lauren. That's it. Those were the high-end stores. You should have seen her face. It was so funny. She was so deflated and disappointed. She started to enjoy Bali more after that once her expectations changed. But I think she thought it was like, if you've been to Hawaii, like around Honolulu, there's that new mall, that really big fancy mall. I think she thought it was kind of like that. She thought not like what Bali is. You have to, when you know what you're expecting, Bali's a beautiful place. Like, I love it. We're definitely want to go back again. But you do have to know what it's like. It's definitely not like a Western country. It is different. The wedding, that itself was really fun. The people who photographed my wedding was Guzmik. So it was kind of funny. On the wedding day, I was waiting around a lobby. We had breakfast and I walked to the lobby and I seen these guys sort of in the lobby area, you know, strapping up, ready to go. They had the camera straps, like dual camera straps. They're setting it all up. So I knew these guys are our wedding photographers. So I went up to one of them. I was like, hey, man, you hear from Guzmik? Guzmik was the one that the company I own. And the guy sort of just looked at me funny and he's like, nope. And I was like, oh, okay, all good. And I walk off. And then later on, I found out, you know, like I was just talking to someone, to one of the staff at the hotel, organizing some pickup for our guests. And then later on, one of the staff was talking to the other guy, the first shooter, Eka, his name was, talking to Eka. And they're like, that's your groom over there. So he runs up to me, like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Apparently, you know, he got a bit nervous. The other guy doesn't usually speak to people that much in English. So that's why when I asked him if it was him shooting our wedding, he said no, but it actually was. But anyway, I started chatting to these guys. So I was chatting to them for like 30 minutes, just talking about cameras, my experience using Canon, because they were all Fuji shooters. I believe Guzmik is actually a Fuji ambassador, the main guy who owns the company that shot my wedding. So I was chatting to them for ages. And then my wife actually messaged me thinking the photographers were late. She's like, I think they're late. I don't know what's happening. They haven't shown up. I haven't seen them yet. I had to message back. I was like, they're chatting to me about cameras. So I, you know, let them go do their thing. So that was pretty funny. And then they came to photograph my room, like me getting ready, that kind of stuff. I ended up kicking them out a little bit earlier just because like it was too early for me to get ready. I just wanted to swim. I wanted to relax. I wanted to have fun. The guys themselves, they did amazing work just from the like videography, from what I've seen of the photos. They did an amazing job as well. I love their editing. I love their shooting style. They really, really push it into you. Like not push, they didn't push it into me, but seeing their images, seeing them work, seeing everything just made me realize, you know, I care too much about gear. I know that. I guess I just love the gear aspect of photography as much as I love the creative. But when you see the amazing work they do with APS-C cameras, then it really shows that who cares about full frame versus APS-C. It's, you can get the results regardless of what you're using. More on that later. But otherwise, you know, my wife got the wedding she always dreamed. I got to feel like a WWE superstar. So funny thing is, you know, as you would know, if you listen to the podcast, I'm a huge WWE fan. I love WWE. The one thing, I let my wife plan everything for the wedding. The one requirement I had is I want an entrance. I want to feel like a WWE superstar, and I want an entrance. So she at first she didn't want to agree to it. She was fighting me on it, and I was like, I'm going to do it regardless, you know. So eventually she ended up giving in. But then on the day, she actually like already excited to see my entrance, because she was in the room. They were doing like her makeup and her hair and all that, and they were doing like a practice, and they were playing my entrance music. So for you that do know wrestling, I came out to Seth Rollins. There's a guy named Seth Rollins, the visionary. I came out to his entrance theme. So what I'll do is, I'll tell you what, I think I'll get a copyright strike if it's public. So I'll see. Hopefully I don't get a copyright strike if it's unlisted, but I'm going to upload the video on YouTube, and then I will put it in the show notes. So if you want to see what my entrance was like at my wedding, you'll be able to see it. But otherwise, I did my entrance. It was so funny as well, like getting to do that. You know, even though we had very little guests, we had like 11 guests, including us. I think like 9 guests, you know, because it was just my wife's family, one of her friends, plus the friend's husband, and Joey. Joey, you know, I always mention Joey. He was kind enough to come all the way from Singapore to our wedding. So it was a very small wedding, but you know, you can hear the guests cheering in that. It was so much fun. I had the wedding planner, the wedding vendor who does all the flowers and decorations, the celebrant and the photographers, videographers tell me they'd never seen anyone do an entrance, never seen a groom do an entrance like mine. So I'm pretty proud of that. And yeah, I got to feel like a real WWE superstar, which was amazing. And once you see the entrance, I'm sure you'll laugh. Actually, I just realized I've posted quite a bit of it on Twitter already. So if you follow me on Mr. Meowpus, my Mr. Meowpus Twitter, which is mainly wrestling stuff, you would have seen the video of it. But actually, I should really post some photos by D. Lee as well. I'm going to do it anyway. I'll do it on photos by D. Lee as well. But otherwise, I'll put it in the show notes. I'll try to put it on YouTube, because that way it's a little bit better quality. But that was so much fun. In case you didn't know, I took the Fuji with me to Bali. So that was the main camera I used. I took that with my 23mm f1.4 and the 56mm 1.4. I use the 23 most of the time. There was a few times I went out for a walk with the 56 just to play around, and I really liked it. I didn't really carry both lenses with me at the same time, because I never carried a backpack. All I did was I had the camera on my Black Rapid sling, and I had it just hanging on my waist. So that was a bit of fun. But there was a few times, I wouldn't say a lot. I can only think of maybe once or twice that I wish I had my Canon or something wider with me. Because when we were at Uluwatu, there was this certain view you have when you first enter the complex, not so much first enter, but once you get to the lobby, if you look for the lobby, it's just straight. You can see the infinity pool with palm trees and the water, and it looks amazing. And then when you're shooting there, I was using the 23, so you don't really get the full view. You get some of the trees, but not the whole thing. In a situation like that, that's where I would have loved to have 16mm, because I could have probably captured everything. Or even if I had that 14 or the 15, that would have been perfect. So, you know, traveling with something like that would have been ideal. And there was a few times where I wish I had the 100 to 400. So our villa had where our wedding was, there was like a view of the water. And several days, especially near sunset, you could see fishing boats or some small boats really far out. And then they were sort of like, you can just see the boat, and then there's like kind of like fog mist. You know, just because it's the edge, it's the Indian Ocean, all you can see is just boom, the disappears, like the water blends in with the sky. So if I had the 100 to 400 with me, I could literally zoom in so much, and then I could have it so it looks just like, you know, a boat fading into nowhere. So that was one shot I feel like I missed out on by not having something longer. And then when we went to the monkey forest as well, it would have been nice to have the 100 to 400 there as well. Mainly because, you know, that way you don't have to get too close. The monkeys did attack someone. They attacked my driver and they attacked this other guy, but the other guy deserved it. He was being rude to the monkeys. And the monkeys are very smart. Like, he was swearing at the monkeys for no reason, just because they walk near him. Even though he went to a monkey forest, I don't know why he think they're not going to walk near him. He started swearing at him, and the monkey he was swearing at was just like a mother monkey with her baby. So another monkey came up and started attacking him to defend him. And people were getting like hell scared, but then the monkey didn't try to attack everyone. It was just attacking him. They disrespected the monkey. The monkey had the beef with him. That's all they wanted. So, you know, I wasn't worried or anything. They did try to steal money from my driver as well. They took money out of his pocket. And when he tried to stop them, they attacked him. And they bit him apparently on the side. So we had to get a tetanus shot and that. But otherwise, it was pretty fun there. I can't wait to post those photos. It was kind of funny because you had these monkeys sleeping. Just two monkeys laying next to each other sleeping. So we were all like, oh, let's take photos next to them. So I think it was my wife and my wife's friend and her husband, we took a photo of them together. Then I took a photo of my wife and her friend together. And then when it came time for my wife and I to take a photo with the monkeys jumped up and started doing the deed. They started getting it on. I gotta keep a clean rating. So if you've been to Bali, they start doing jiggy jig, if you know. You would have heard that before, but that's pretty much what happened. The monkeys started procreating while we were there in our photo as well. So it was pretty funny. Otherwise, you know, it was a really great trip, something very memorable. We all kind of got Bali belly as we got back and we were a bit sick, so that wasn't very memorable. If you don't know, in Bali, you cannot do anything with the tap water. You can't brush your teeth. You can't do anything. The tap water is very bad. I washed like my hair clippers with the tap water and it smelled like feces after. Like, it's literally that bad. Luckily, I have like an alcohol solution to clean it, so that smell didn't stick around. But when you're there, you brush your teeth with bottled water, you know, wash your face, everything with bottled water, drinking bottled water. You have to always use bottled water. So I didn't miss that aspect of, you know, I'm glad to be back in Sydney where we can use tap water for everything, drink tap water. It's all safe. But otherwise, it was really good. Next up, you know, when we got back to Sydney, I had some good weather and a day off work because we had a long weekend thanks to the bank holiday. Here in Australia, we got like a bank holiday. It's technically not a public holiday. It's only for banks, you know, in finance. So we got the day off. I went out to take photos as well. I decided to use the 16mm. The two lenses I want to use the most at the moment would generally be the 16 and the 100 to 400. I'm most comfortable using the other lenses, say like my 35, 50, 85, but I want to use these other lenses, get some use into them. So I went out to shoot cityscapes. I realized that I'm really bad with UWA lenses, like ultra wide angles now, even really wide angles. Anything longer than 35, I feel like, feels so weird to me. I would walk to a certain spot and think, oh yeah, I probably filled the frame now. And of course, I look for my viewfinder and the item's still tiny in the viewfinder because of how I frame. Whereas certain ones, I managed to frame a bit better. The photo I ended up framing well, which was that my wide angle dilemma post, that one I'm actually quite happy with, to be honest. That one's really good. I also recently purchased Lumenzia. If you haven't heard of it, that's used to use luminosity masks in Photoshop. That one was really helpful in editing that. I may do a video on using Lumenzia as an example of how powerful it is, but otherwise, you know, maybe I'll just do a start to finish editing video one day. Otherwise, you know, but these lenses, like the 16mm, they do leave a bit to be desired. Now, it could be a case that, you know, I miss the zooms, because zooms at certain ways can be a lot better. So in the mid-range, I feel like you don't really need a zoom from, say, 35 to 85 in a way, because you can kind of capture everything you could with the 35 or a 50 and just sort of panorama or getting closer, that kind of thing, crop, that kind of stuff. I feel like in the mid-range, they're not as useful, whereas something like a 14 to 35, 16 to 35, they're much more useful. The same as 100 to 400, because you can't always get closer, you know, shoot with 100mm prime and always get closer, especially if it's like stuff like wildlife. I am kind of spoiled as well by what zooms I had owned in the past. So obviously previously I had the 16 to 35 f4, which is tack sharp corner to corner. I sold it purely because I was using Sony and I wanted something native, but that lens was really nice. Then I own the Sony 16 to 35mm FE 2.8GM lens. That lens is phenomenal. That's still probably the greatest, you know, wide angle lens I've ever owned. You know, and although the 16mm isn't bad, I am comparing it to the 16 to 35, which I got for around 1200 AUD. The 16mm is like 400 AUD. And then the GM is like 2300 or even more. I think it's like 2500, 2600 AUD sometimes. So obviously the pricing wise, you should expect these zooms to be better image quality than this prime. Even though primes are generally better, I will be probably quite disappointed, you know, in whatever brand it was, if their $1,000 zooms and $2,000 zooms on their highest level L and GM were not better than a non, you know, just like a plastic prime, pretty much. If I do want to go the zoom route and get another zoom and sell that 16mm, which I think is kind of an option, kind of a likely option, the 16 to 35 f4, the EF lens, I still have the EF adapter. I haven't sold it yet, sadly. But that is sort of an option to get it, but I don't feel it's good value. The cheapest I could see it, $1,300 for a gray market, which I haven't really bought gray in a long time. And either way, when I originally bought it, was around $1,100 off eBay. So $1,300 still seems way too high. But if I want a, you know, a genuine lens, from one of the local stores, I'm looking around $17.99 for the 16 to 35. So let's call it $1,800. Some stores are even doing $18.99. But if you say it as $1,800, $17.99 on sale, I've seen it, the Air 14 to 35 for only about $2,300, $2,200 on sale sometimes. So although, you know, $400, it is quite a bit. You could technically buy some lenses. You could buy a 15mm or the 16mm with that. It's still better value. It's a newer lens. Don't need to worry about the adapter. You get 2mm extra on the long end, which actually does make a difference. But there is also the new IR15-30, which I mentioned in the news. That lens, I haven't seen any full solid proper reviews for it from anyone yet. So once there are reviews for it, then I will consider if I swap the 16mm for that. Coming up on Christmas time, it's always sort of like a temptation to just sell my gear and swap brands, swap back to Sony again. You know, if you think about it, well, maybe some people don't. With mobile phones, some people will always stick with the same brand no matter what. Whereas I think it can be fun to swap phone brands because, you know, if you're using an iPhone for like 2-3 years, then you swap to Samsung, it feels like such a new, different experience. Whereas if you're getting one iPhone, you swap to another iPhone, it's generally the exact same. You got the same app, same layout, same look. It might change like your wallpaper, but nothing really changes, where it does very much change when you're swapping, you know, brands. So the same with Canon or any camera brand. Really, with photography, the buy and sell market is so good that there's nothing really stopping you from selling and swapping brands and trying something different and then swapping back if you don't like it. Obviously, I went from Canon to Sony and then back to Canon. I could technically go back to Sony again. There's nothing stopping me. I could even go buy a Nikon. I don't really care. It's more about lenses. I always preach that a system is only as good as its lenses. And to me, it's very mixed. Like Sony and Canon are really honestly neck and neck. I can honestly say for bodies, I do prefer the Canon, mainly because of the bulb timer and just the feel in the hand. I feel like the autofocus, I like it personally better. I'd never use Sony with real-time tracking, so for all I know, it may be better. But from what I've seen from people who shoot multiple brands, they do say Canon has a slight edge for tracking and its IF is more accurate. I know for animals, it covers a lot more animals as well. Not that I really shoot animals, but otherwise, there are aspects of each that do have their benefits. You know, in the perfect world, I could afford to own both. I would just own literally an A7 IV with the Sigma 85mm and 35GM and other lenses on Canon that, you know, I like better, like the budget 100 to 400, that kind of stuff. Maybe if Canon did a decent 50mm, because the 1.8 is nice, but it's obviously a 1.8. The 51.2 is too expensive for my liking. That's the other issue I have with Canon as well, is the pricing. So IRF lenses here in Australia are not cheap. A lot of people here, I don't know, they just seem to accept. I've done this pricing. I won't do it again, actually. The pricing rant, I've done too many times. If you listen every week, you would know. We get overcharged on pricing and people are just happy to accept it. They just want to pay USD price, converted to AED plus GST, which is way too high. Sony are not doing that. Sony are charging much cheaper their lens prices. Like for example, if I wanted to buy the Canon EF 35mm, hold on, let me Google this. So if I wanted to buy the Canon EF 35mm f1.4L Mark II today, if I walk into a store to buy it brand new, I would be looking for roughly around, at the cheapest I can see it, $2,999. $2,900, so nearly $3,000 for this lens that is significantly older now. Obviously, you know this lens has been out for several years, nearly $3,000 AUD just to buy that here in Australia. Whereas the Sony, keep in mind, Sony is newer, the Sony is smaller and likely better optically being a newer lens. I can get it brand new non-gray for $1,847. That's $1,200 cheaper for the same focal length, the same aperture, except one is significantly newer. I'd say, dare to say, you know, I haven't seen side-to-side comparisons, likely sharper. It's definitely smaller, lighter. I do not see the reasoning for that. In reality, with the DSLR, you know, that EF lens being older and older mount, everything moving the mirrorless, that lens should honestly be the same price as the Sony, if not cheaper, in my opinion anyway. But this is my issue with Canon. I just do not get why they charge so high. Obviously, they want to be this premium brand, but for their lenses, they need to compete on pricing as well. I'm not saying they have to be $500 cheaper than Sony, at least match the pricing of the competition. I think in the US, maybe the price differences aren't as extreme as they are here in Australia, But just here, we get milked so bad. And then the government supports it as well. They introduced a tax for online shopping. So if you buy anything from overseas, you have to pay the tax on it. It's to stop, you know, all these stores were complaining, like these greedy stores were complaining because people were buying goods for fair prices overseas. And they just wanted them to buy it, you know, obviously at their extreme inflated prices, which is unfair to the consumer. Yeah, anyone in Australia, you're looking to buy some, you know, expensive lens, I would suggest just going on a holiday to America and while you're there, or even anywhere overseas, buying it while you're there. Okay, so I just had a look as well, comparing the EF 35 1.4 Mark II. I know the Sony is $1,399 for their GM lens, whereas the Canon is $1,999 USD. So still, that's about, what, $600 more for an older lens. I just do not get the logic of it. I know the prices have gone up since the whole, you know, supply issues, but just makes no sense to me how they can charge so much when Sony charges so much lighter. It's stuff like that that just makes me sort of annoyed with Canon and makes me want to swap back to Sony. Although, like, no joke, the Canon body does what I need, does it excellently. It's just the lens choices, you know, them locking out third parties rather than working with them like Sony. Sony do have their issues, no doubt about that. 100% they have their issues, but, you know, they do a lot of things right as well. And credit has to be given where credit's due. So both Canon and Nikon really need to wake up and let third parties work with them. You know, if that 85mm 1.4 art, DN art was available in Canon, I'd probably be a lot happier. You got a good macro lens, you got a good 85mm portrait option. You know, there's so many better options there. But I don't need that new 30, there's a, I don't even know if I covered in the news, there was a 135mm f1.8, I believe, or yeah, I think it was f1.8 Samyang FE lens announced. That one looks amazing as well. The quality is excellent. All these lenses, you know, I wish I could get them. That's why the swap back to Sony does tempt me a bit. I know if I sold all of my gear right now, I could literally get an A7 Mark IV, a 35 GM 1.4, and an 85mm art, all in that budget for what I'm replacing my stuff. Obviously, I'd be having less lenses, but in all honesty, I don't really mind. I'd rather have something a bit different. You know, if I was smart, which I'm not really, I would sell my Fuji 23 and my Fuji 56mm, and I would get the 33mm, the new 33mm f1.4. So that way I had 35 and 85 on Fuji, I mean 35 and 85 on my full frame body, and then a 50mm equivalent on my APS-C. And then later on, if I feel like getting a wide angle, I could always get a wide angle, but I don't even see the need sometimes with what I shoot. So this is the stuff that always goes through my mind. It is somewhat bad gas, but at the same time, I want to be able to sell my gear while the price is still good. Because, you know, once the next Canon generation of Canon body comes out, I would definitely be wanting to sell that, like the upgrade to 6D Mark II, R6 Mark II, sorry. But so that way, when I do that, I could technically sell. You always want to sell when the prices are good. And with the holiday season coming up, the used prices will actually go down. So if you sell it now, then just save the money and then buy it once Boxing Day sales, Black Friday sales, all that kind of stuff. You can actually, you know, get everything within your budget for quite a bit cheaper. So a lot of tough decisions. And plus the fact that I'm broke as well from the wedding doesn't exactly help. It keeps me in line, which is good. Otherwise, moving on from that rant, you know, this episode is going to be extremely long. But winter is almost over. So that's a good thing. Oh, not a good thing, sorry. That's a bad thing for my shooting because I won't want to go out as much late. Because, you know, I like to stay home in a nice house when the sun sets and when it's hot. I just hate the heat. I like the cold. So I need to make the most of these last few weeks and the time before daylight saving starts again. And one other thing I forgot to mention is Fuji. So with the Fuji images, I really love how the images look straight out of camera. Now, in saying that, Canon images, they do look nice out of camera, but I find when I edit, I think because shooting Sony for those few years, I got used to the way the colors work, and the colors on the Fuji, for some reason, when you edit them, they just respond a lot more like the Sony. So I figured out a way. What I do is, people probably think I'm strange because people love Canon colors, but I use a Velvia film simulation on Fuji. So I found a way to make, I pretty much just made a preset. I made a preset to make my Canon camera colors look more like the Fuji colors straight out of camera. So when I edit them, it saves a lot of editing time. Just like with the Fuji, I just have to do very minor adjustments rather than adjust it. Although I plan to, what I'm doing is I'm using the HSL tab to change all the colors, maybe add a bit more contrast in some areas in that. I actually bought these color charts. So usually the color charts you use to calibrate, you know, the colors on your printer or whatever kind of stuff. What I plan to do is take a photo of that with more colorful items in the photo, take a photo of it, and then take it with the Fuji, and then next to it, take it with the Canon, take the exact same image with both cameras. So that way I can truly in Lightroom calibrate it and make it look the exact same. If I do that, then I just need to create a preset of that and then I'm good to go. Each time I want to edit, makes it super simple. Otherwise, I think I'll probably keep it here. That's it for this episode. Did keep it casual, did my rants, let you know everything that's on my photographic mind right now. I'll make sure to include that video in the show notes and all that as well, all the stuff. So if you did enjoy this episode, please make sure to subscribe. Be great if you could leave a rating, a review, that kind of stuff. Any feedback would be great. I do have a little form in the show notes where you can submit a topic you think you'd like me to cover. Otherwise, you can find all previous episodes at thephotographyenthusiast.com. You can find me personally at photosbydlee.com. And on Twitter, I'm photosbydlee as well. Otherwise, thank you very much for listening. Sorry again for taking so long to get back to recording, but hopefully all be back to normal from now on. So thank you. Take care. See ya.